and regulatory point of view, I gave it a thumbs up.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think the one option that might be considered, depending on whether we are able to get more resources, I mean, as I said, CMS has shifted in terms of all the interpretive guidelines and culture change has picked up, although I think only about 5% of homes are doing it, fully adopting it. But it might be possible to construct a supplemental set of questions that really target a culture change issues. And I know we do have some testing on some of those items that were discarded, where we did try to get at the customization of a person's activities and things like that.
Judy, it's Dave Gifford. Thank you for putting all this material together so quickly and getting it before us at our request. And I think we all greatly appreciate it because we all were very interested in looking at and we're disappointed initially that we didn't see any satisfaction or at least some input from consumers in the metric. There was earlier discussion and questions about individual items and everything. I want to go back and at least make sure we address the issue. The way my reading of it is, these are this measurement tool creates composite scale scores where individual, for quality improvement, individual homes can see individual question responses that they may want to figure out how to address. But from a measurement standpoint and a reporting standpoint and an overall sense of where a facility is, this creates composite scale scores. And you guys, I know, have spent a lot of time that over the years, because I've even given you suggestions of questions to include in the measure that actually don't help scale. On face validity, they are something you'd want input on and you think would be important, and a home might want to know, but actually the asking of that question is captured in other questions because of the way the consumers or the respondents interpret the questions and answer them. Do you want to comment on that?
I guess if it would be helpful if you gave me an example of what you're thinking of, what kind of a question.
I was just responding to some of the earlier comments on the call about some people saying that in reviewing some of the scales, that some of the scales were missing questions about or the way they were asking about dressing or some of the different timing of issues varied. I guess the other one was about the short-term population that didn't ask about discharge planning, but then again, not all SNF short-term patients are discharged from the facility. A large proportion of them remain at the facility after their SNF stay.
There may be questions that aren't in the composite. I mean, there's like a total of like 50 questions in the short stay, and some of them, you know, there's only about 20 some that are in the composite. So some of the questions could be used as indicators to help the facility, like in terms of, you know, pain medicine or something like that. But actually, that's not a good one because that actually is part of the composite.
From a reporting standpoint, from a measurement standpoint,
yeah.
What are the caps or what is the measure? It's not each individual item question.
No. In the short stay, we've got what I'm in the middle of is confirming whether they're using the composite for care items, and there should be like 5 care items, communication and respect, and then there's environment items. Those are the ones that I'm assuming will probably carry over in the short stay resident. You know, were you bothered by noise at night or during the day, those kind of items, and how clean, you know, was the facility? You know, and being able to get, you know, with, you know, how gentle they were when they helped you bathe and shower or things like that, the basic activities, and how did they help you with pain if you had pain? And we were trying to distinguish the you know, whether they just gave you medicine or they helped you in other ways with the pain. So those are the composites. You know, the 3 composites that I'm pretty sure will carry over in the short stay. What I'm not sure about is the autonomy and the activity.
Judy, this is Heidi again. I just, you know, I really appreciate the rigor that has gone into this, and sort of as, you know, time is evolving and changing so quickly as we speak. And I do like your ideas, potentially at least, in, you know, going back to CMF if possible, just because I think these issues are truly cornerstone to moving change and improving change in the way that we all think, again, is a more humanized, individualized approach. So just thank you so much for all that you've done.
Well, it was not just me. It was certainly a huge team that worked on all of this.
Of course.
Yes, and over quite a bit of time. So I'm, in some ways, I'm very happy that after all this time, at least it's getting, you know, considered.
Something like this needs to be here. So it's with angst that I provided that extensive feedback because as one question was raised, you know, when I give it a thumbs up, you know, I want this to move forward. So I guess I need to make certain that I say that. But I if there's a way to you know, really think through some of the questions, the care transitions measures, as an example, if they're something that we're approving, you know, that would be really beneficial to include.
Yeah. Now that the CTM3 could easily be added after the core questions to the short stay and before the demographic about you section. So that could see being an add-on or a supplemental set to be added, and that's already been approved by NQF, right?
Yeah. Sounds like it.
I don't know how they're adapting it or how Eric Coleman is adapting it for the nursing home setting.
We'll go over that in a few minutes when we get to
the section.
And Eric's on the line anytime we get to that conversation.
Okay, great. If it's okay with folks, if we could move on to the next measure 27, we are running low on time. So, is Bob Zorowitz? I believe you were the.
Yes, I am, and I will try to be. Brief, because I think Heidi hit a lot of the same issues with this one. I think it's a little different because this is a long-term instrument, so some of the issues with transition are not quite as applicable. Just taking a brief look at the measure, very quickly, it looks at environment, care, communication, and respect, autonomy, and activities. I think it does hit on culture change, not explicitly, but within the questions, for instance, eating in the dining room, the temperature in the nursing home, what time you would like to get up, noise, et cetera, privacy. So I think these do serve as an adequate proxy for culture change. And overall, we had no problems with the content of the survey. I just want to say up front that there are some issues that I'm going to discuss, and this is a very, very important topic, and I really would like to be persuaded that this should be an endorsed measure. So please help persuade me as I go through this. So let me talk about, let me find my notes here. This form is a little bit, okay. Importance to measure and report, there is no question. This certainly meets the patient-centeredness goal of healthcare quality and may possibly reflect equity and efficiency. Whether it's correlated with safety, effectiveness, or even timeliness is debatable. I couldn't find any literature reporting on success or failures using this for let me go to the first thing. Correlated with safety, effectiveness, or even timeliness, I think is debatable, but I think there are other measures which will take that into account. So I think this stands on its own as a satisfaction measure. Using the nursing home CAHPS for improvement, I'm not sure You know, I've had a lot of issues with using various satisfaction instruments to determine whether you can actually use them as instruments for improvement. I think you can use this one. It may require asking additional questions and drilling into some of these questions, but I do think that it can be used for improvement. And certainly, your work and the literature seems to indicate it's valid and reducible. I gave it a partial on that because of some of those reservations, but overall positive. Let me move on. I will tell you that, let me see where my comments. Okay, strengths and weaknesses in relation to the sub-criteria for scientific acceptability. It's been well-tested, established, and validated from my reading. The numerator and denominator are well-defined, although I didn't see there was a minimum N defined.
It is for the composites. I have to find it right now. I think it's about 85 to 90 to meet the environment criteria.
Okay, so this,
yeah.
So I mean, the majority of long-stay nursing homes are smaller than that.
Right, so you might have to do a rolling sample.
Okay, so that's an issue, and I'm not sure how that impacts what it means if we were to endorse the measure. And that also gets into feasibility and usability, which I'll discuss in a little bit. And I believe there's a nonspecific time window, correct?
Right, that non-specific present, and there's a lot of documentation on that from all the cognitive
okay.
testing reports.
Now, you know, weaknesses so far as the scientific acceptability, harmonization is an issue because of the 30-day cutoff. We don't often know at 30 days if somebody is going to convert from short-term to long-term. Plus, a lot of our other long-term measures are at 100 days. So, I know you discussed this before, but so far as harmonization goes, I think that's an issue. No comment.
Well, I guess I'm not sure. I know for practical purposes, I was trying to talk to Mary Pratt yesterday, how they are actually counting, because I think. The 100 days was used because of the way the SNF benefit was defined, and it wasn't clear if they were actually going to count a pure 100 days.
Right.
What has been published up on the Nursing Home Compare website has been they just said if someone was in a Medicare SNF benefit, they counted
right.
them as short stay, and they didn't actually go and count. You know what I'm saying?
So right, I think, I understand
that. I think
that.
The sampling structure could be, you know, could be modified depending on how we want to harmonize. But I guess I would like to see how CMS will really operationalize the 100-day cutoff and not just saying, is this person paid as a Medicare SNF benefit, when in fact they may just have gone to a hospital, be a long-stay resident, and actually gone in to a hospital for 3 days and come back as a Medicare SNF.
That certainly makes sense.
So I think that's not just mine. I think it's across the board in terms
right.
of how to really, and merging and counting, I think, will be an issue. And maybe Judy Tobin could, you know, talk to that or whatever. You know, I think it's an issue, I think, for all nursing homes because, you know, in and out, admissions and ping-ponging and all that.
This
right.
is, Darlene Thompson, I don't know if this is the place, but you can using the MDS 3.0 because if you pick the assessment and look at the date, the 1600, which is the date of the stay, you walk backwards, you would find, if you found a reentry tracking form, you would then go and find a discharge. If the discharge was return anticipated, that patient was still in your facility in the past, and you would just walk back through the assessments until you either hit an initial admission assessment, which was less than 100 days from the last assessment that you're using as your target, or they hit that 100 days. I mean, it is feasible to do it using the 3.0. You just may have to walk past or glean past several MDSs to find where that 100-day cutoff happens to be. But it can be pretty cut and dried using the 3.0.
And this is Judy. Judy Tobin from CMS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What we are going to use for long stay definition with the quality measures is 100, anything greater than 100 days. So
mm-hmm.
101.
Okay.
So, I mean, it would make more sense to have this harmonized by having it at 100 days. I think that would be the safer thing to do.
And it's actually
my opinion.
Greater than 100 days because it's going to be zero up and through 100 days will be the short stay, and anything greater than 100 will be
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think the other thing in terms of the 30 days was that we were trying to capture people who were not thought to be leaving, also expected to stay. So the question again is that what is the point where they may adjust to the nursing home, and I know that was raised by Heidi, I guess, earlier. So that's, a decision on that cutoff.
Right.
And I'm not sure what research has been done on that. I know Rosalie Kane was concerned that people, the longer they stay, and I think she did some analysis on the quality of life, that they adjust they lower their expectations the longer they stay.
Is it too? This is Bruce Boisenault again. Is it too simple? I sort of understand the benefits of the 30 day, and that you might not chop out a whole group of patients hadn't reached 100 days. I think that was at least part of the thinking. But at the end of the day, aren't we determining who's in which pile? And as long as somebody at the nursing home is staying within these rules or guidelines, I think is a better word.
Yeah.
If the nursing home stays within the guidelines that are set out, even though they may not be perfectly harmonized, if they stay within the guidelines that are set out and they don't, in other words, as long as each patient is in either one category or the other, it seems to me the nursing home has the best information on which one should be taking which survey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Am I oversimplifying it?
No. I mean, I think, as I said, as long as our guidelines are clear.
Yeah, okay.
So, Bruce, I'm sorry, this is Dee Dee Orton. I came in late, so I missed some. But are you speaking in favor of the 100 days?
Let me just be candid. I'm speaking in favor of moving forward on and not letting that be the sort of barrier, only because I don't, as long as patients aren't dropped and as long as the nursing home has some, for patients where CMS really would have no way of knowing whether it's a long-term patient or not, I actually kind of feel like you guys in the nursing home world should decide.
Mm-hmm.
Right, except that if the nursing home may know, but if it's arbitrarily cut off at 30 days, then it won't matter whether we know they're short-term or long-term, because one of the criteria here is not intention to stay. I mean, if it were going to be 30 days with intention to stay, that would be one thing.
I see. Is this a showstopper, or is it a potential?
No, it's not a showstopper. It's just another issue. It's just a harmonization issue.
Okay.
And in terms of what this is ultimately going to mean as a publicly reported measure, I think you're going to get a mixture of short-term and long-term patients that have different expectations, which was discussed in the first survey.
Right.
So I'm not sure that it will. And it will depend on case mix. If you have a nursing home with a higher percentage of short-term patients, I'm not even talking about patients that are long-term but come in on the Medicare benefit for a while. I'm talking about nursing homes that really have significant subacute populations. I think you're going to be comparing apples and oranges when you look at different nursing homes.
But see, I guess the one thing to think about through is making sure and I'm not sure if I made the distinction, the long stay is for current residents who we assume will be long-term, okay? And the short stay are for those who have already been discharged. So you know that they've at least been discharged home and not to another facility, like to another.
Right. So your short-term survey, you're going to know for sure they're short-term.
Yes.
But your long-term survey, you're not necessarily going to know at 30 days because you can have a short-term patient that stays for 60 or 90 days.
Yeah. Except that, yes. Well, that as I said, but they usually will, you might have a discharge plan indicated.
Right. If that, but will that be a criteria for using the long-term survey? So if they're here for 35 days and you're going to do this survey and you know for sure that they're going to convert to long-term, or you know that they're still, let me put it the opposite way, they're here for 35 days and you know the plan is still to send them home, but they've got 6 weeks of antibiotics and they still have another couple of weeks left. Are you going to is that an exclusion criteria?
Well, the plan, it sounds like it's a discharge. The plan is discharged home so that they would not be counted. That's the way I would interpret it.
Right. I mean, it's not written as an
exclusion.
Yeah, it's not written as an exclusion, which I guess it should be, which would take care of the problem.
Okay, yeah. I think I said, well, anyway, I need to clarify that then.
Okay.
Okay.
The other issue is exclusions is non-English speaking. I know the MDS 3.0 has been validated using interpreters, but I'm concerned, and maybe you could answer this, I'm concerned with utilizing the survey in an institution that has a large non-English speaking population in terms of cultural bias.
Well, at the moment, it is not available. I mean, if we had resources, we can make it translated. But then you need to get also the language-appropriate interviewers for the long-stay
right.
survey.
Okay. Finally, and I'll try to hurry this up. So far as usability. This does require specially trained personnel, and it's unclear, particularly as we're moving into using MDS 3.0, which is going to require a fair amount of training of personnel. This is going to add significant time and burden to the staff to administer on a personal basis. So I wasn't quite sure how it was envisioned that this would be carried out.
Okay, well, we're not at all envisioning anybody associated with the facility doing the interviews.
Ah, okay.
Because that we make that very clear in the preliminary guidelines, that because we are trying to be very cautious about fear of retaliation any positive, bias, because it's somebody from the staff, the facility staff. This would need to be an independently administered survey. Now, the 2005 pilot test used professional interviewers, Alberta, Canada has used trained graduate students. New York State, NIOSA, had tried using I don't remember how many, I think maybe four to six nursing homes, an experiment with ombudsmen. Anyway, so there are, and they are, the graduate students were a lot less money. I don't have the cost. I mean, Canada's a great deal. You get a great deal of research for your buck up in Canada. but we're not at all envisioning the staff of the facility to do that. And I know it's very different when you're doing it for the MDS 3.0.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
That answers that question.
So, Judy, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is Dee Dee Redden. So you really have, I mean, there's no real estimate of what this would cost in the real world.
Well, we have costs from Ohio. And I know it's... I have costs per, I don't have a cost per complete, which is what I was trying to get. I have a cost per whatever number of residents, and it was like $28 per resident. But it's good because not everybody completes it, the cost will be higher per complete.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at least $28 for the state of Ohio, and I'm trying to think if it was 2008. I think they did their in-person resident survey, and they do it independently. I don't remember if it's Vital Research that does it, the interviews, and Rhode Island has done interviewing. I don't know what their cost was. I don't know if GIF, if you remember what it may be.
I forgot what it was. It was about the same as doing it was a little more expensive than doing a mailed survey of 100% sample versus a face-to-face interview of a random smaller sample of 20 individuals. Our homes have elected to move away from the face-to-face interview and went to a mailed survey. Because you also, in a program like that, you still did mailed surveys of families and discharged individuals. So we were doing that. So I'm trying to remember the total cost of it. I think it was in the, like, a $50 to $100 per person range for the face-to-face. But we only interviewed about, I think, up to 20 people.
This is Chris Miller, University of Minnesota, State of Minnesota, for the past 4 years has been doing interviews of nursing homes and of residents in all of our nursing homes. We're not using the CAPS, but we're using Kane's work with the 11 domains.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be at least a cost estimate, or not a cost, or we can give you real cost of what that cost. And we're using Vital Research.
Okay. So, yeah, I can get the costs from Ohio and other people in Rhode Island then, if people want to know that. And I think I pointed out Ohio alternates. They prefer to at least every other year to get a resident survey, and then they alternate with a family member survey.
This is Dee Dee Ordinate, and one thing that struck me is that the difficulty that people had finding a private place even within the nursing home. Was there any possible way to assess the impact of this on response?
Well, I think what they used, and it's in our final report, is that they had show cards so the person could indicate the response rather than shout it out or speak it out, so that they didn't feel that to be a problem.
Okay, but that was just the feeling of the people administering it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bob Zorowitz again. Mr. Kubat, do you have any additional comments that you want to add?
Yeah, thank you, Bob. I had the privilege of being the secondary reviewer, and Bob and I did have a chance to visit yesterday, and would echo much of the comments that he had made. Importance, no question. We talked about that at our face-to-face meeting and even prior to that. And I think the scientific acceptability issues, we named and talked about that 30-day, 100-day harmonization issue, and I think that that is a significant one. The language one is a very significant issue. But for me, the most significant considerations in all of this are on the feasibility and usability side. Because of cost, because of other factors, I recognize that the personal interview may be the gold standard. But in terms of being able to create a sustainable, affordable, universalizable model going forward, I think there's just huge issues with that. The much of what makes satisfaction, experience of care data helpful, useful to providers, the is the ability to work with a Gallup, a Press Ganey, a My Interview, whoever the vendor is that can help them not only embed core questions within the context of an instrument, but have it be that within the context of an instrument, because there will be other questions that they want to ask that aren't addressed in this. Organizations have those needs and issues. And you need that resource to help you to help organizations and providers use that data for quality improvement in a most effective and efficient manner. That's also the means and mechanism by which the data gets transmitted to CMS for purposes of public reporting purposes. I just think that's huge, not only for this instrument, but also for the other two. And I would just name that.
I think that's all she wrote.
No one else has any other comments. Maybe we can move to the last CAPS measure, number 28. And I believe Sister Mary Rose here is the primary reviewer. Are you on the line?
Hey, Suzanne, this is Karen. Before you move on, I just wanted to clarify with Judy. Judy, didn't you say that additional questions could be added to any of these CAPS surveys? Even the interview, if you work with whoever vendor external interview group, you could add other questions. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Although you would want to be, I think on an in-person interview, you'd want to be more careful about the number of questions, questions, because of the burden. And I think we said that really it was like less than 20 minutes as it was.
Right.
But Judy, that if you add those questions, they're going to be used for internal quality improvement purposes. You don't add them into and alter the scale scores, because what we would be approving is a measure for scale scores of quality measurement. Correct.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I think another thing Bill Kubot brought up about My Interview and some of the other vendors out there. I mean, they often do a two-stage. First, they do a general survey to find out where the problem areas are, and then they go back in and do another set of, drilling down questions, which is instead of trying to do it all at once. So until you know, identify which areas you think need or is a priority for improvement, you don't do the extra set of questions.
No, this is Bob Zorowitz. I have nothing further.
Okay.
Just as a procedural question, are we going to, at some point later, talk about our recommendations?
I guess we should do that now. We did that. I think that happened for the first one. So, right? Did it? Yeah. So. Yeah, if you want to make a recommendation, now would be the time to do it.
I have to tell you, this is Bob again, I've gone back and forth on this, and Mr. Kubot knows that, and I've sent two different responses in, and I really have great reservations about the language issue, particularly since I happen to be in a home which has multiple Spanish and Cantonese-speaking residents, and I'm concerned that excluding them introduces a cultural bias whereby you may get a very good satisfaction survey from the English speakers and not know that the non-English speakers are unhappy. That's a major reservation I have. I'm satisfied so far as usability and feasibility, with the idea that someone else will be doing it and that's not a burden on the nursing home, although I would like to see how that will end up being done. I had originally said time-limited endorsement, then I had said no endorsement, and I'm changing my mind again, but with great reservations. I'm going to recommend a time-limited endorsement, but I would really recommend, number one, resolution of the 30-day, 100-day to make it very clear that those who participate are long-term care residents and that it be built into the inclusion and exclusion criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the language issue really must be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think there's going to be a cultural bias otherwise.
Yeah. Well, actually, the CAPS team itself hasn't really approved or done the translation of a Cantonese, but Alberta, Canada has a Cantonese version.
Right.
I don't know if it's Cantonese or Mandarin. I don't remember now, because of their population. And they followed the CAPS translating rules or guidelines that exist. They didn't need to worry about Spanish. That actually, there may be a Chinese language version already available.
Right. With that, and now I would recommend endorsement on a time-limited basis. I don't think it's ready for a permanent endorsement. I think it has to be tested, and these other issues need to be taken care of. But I'm pulling back on my recommendation not to endorse.
Quick question from Bruce Boisenault to our reviewer. If what I'd call static testing was done to determine if there was a cultural bias during some reasonable period of time, the 1 or the 3 years, whatever it goes to, would that work in the short term? Or, in other words, if it was determined that as of the date of the research, it does not appear that there's a cultural bias, is that enough, or do they need to have different languages for this in the long run? I'm not saying before approval.
Well, if there's evidence that that excluding non-English speakers, in other words, you'd sort of have to do a study using English speakers versus non-English speakers to see that there's correlation between the two.
Right.
And if that's the case, I think that would be reasonable. I still think you need to develop it in different languages or validate it using translators, either way. But I think that would be acceptable, at least in the short run, and that's, it's still one of the, I would still recommend a time-limited endorsement.
Yeah, and I'm just going to go on the record and say I think a Spanish version would be easy to create, and that in the near term, when it gets down to this project, starting to figure out how to move Spanish in particular into the mainstream of this sure makes sense to me.
This is Bill Kubat, the secondary reviewer, and for purposes of the record, and I certainly am respectful of Bob's change of thought and so forth, but I would just have to say from my perspective that I would, my recommendation would be for not to endorse, and simply because I think that the personal interview methodology is so inherently problematic because of any ability to see that as a sustainable, universalizable methodology. Just within our organization, I have seen what the cost impact of the home health caps has done for home health surveys. And that's a mail-in. To think about what that would be based on personal interview, even if you did outsource it to another entity. Now, yes, the interviewing is not necessarily the burden of facility staff, but the facility has to pay for it. And when you overlay on that the issue of translation into other languages, it just exacerbates the cost issues. I don't see how it's sustainable. I don't see how it's ultimately feasible.
This is Judy. I thought, and maybe Dave Gifford could correct me, I thought that some of the costs of the in-person survey when Rhode Island did it was able to be paid by Medicaid for quality assurance. Not sure.
Yes. We ended up having Medicaid. Since this was a mandated under our public reporting legislation, as a mandated requirement, it then made itself eligible for reimbursement under Medicaid if you were not already at your capped amount from Medicaid. I will say we actually had a